Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome into Soccer Morning right here on WorldSoccerTalk.com. Very happy to be with you. It's a beautiful day here. My kid does have strep throat, so that's a thing. But we're dealing with it. We've got antibiotics. It's going to be fine. Everything will be great. In fact, this show will be great because we're going to talk to Tom Marshall, our old friend, at Mexico World Cup on Twitter. You need to be following him if you're not, because this is a time of year when not only do you have Liga MX well underway, lots of interesting storylines happening down in Mexico, but the Mexico national team is looking for a new head coach. And remember, we are, 7 weeks out from the, well, just about 2 months out from the Confederations Cup playoff between the United States and Mexico at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California, in front of what is sure to be a raucous crowd of something like 95,000 people. So Mexico's on that track. We'll talk to Tom about that story and more. We'll also talk about the former MLS Sueño winner who's making some noise in Mexico. Well, that'll come up, I'm sure. In the meantime, and by the way, you can always hit us up on Twitter at Soccer Morning. You have questions, comments, concerns. Follow me at DavisJSN. We can hit the news here on a Wednesday. Lots to talk about on the wire, so to speak. First up, Barcelona wins the European Super Cup 5-4 over Sevilla in Tbilisi, Georgia. Lionel Messi with two stunning free kick goals, nearly had a third. We'll get to that in a second. Sevilla actually came back from a deficit of 4-1 to equalize that game, to level that game. It went to extra time, and in extra time, Pedro, yes, that Pedro, the one that's probably not going to be a Barcelona player for very much longer, scores on a rebound off of a Messi free kick to give Barcelona the 5-4 lead, which they held on to get the win in this Super Cup, starting off the season pretty well for the Spanish Giants. Again, Pedro, a target of Manchester United, likely going to be leaving Barcelona. He says that he did not ask to leave Barcelona, that he's not interested in leaving, except for the fact that he doesn't have the playing time he needs, and that's why he's going to move. This is a very practical approach to transfer rumors from Pedro. It's an interesting development. As I mentioned before, we'll talk to Tom Marshall about this. Reports have Mexico targeting Chile manager Jorge Sampaoli. He recently led Chile to the Copa America title this summer. The Argentine is the latest in a line of candidates for the job. Remember, Marcelo Bielsa's name has also been linked to Mexico. We'll ask Tom whether or not there's any fire where that smoke happens to be. Stoke City has completed the signing of Swiss midfielder Jerdan Shaqiri from Inter Milan for a club record £12 million. If you ever wanted a sign of just how rich the English game is right now at the top level, I think this is it. Stoke City signing Jerdan Shaqiri for £12 million. We'll see how the winger does on a cold night in Stoke. Video of Costa Rica head coach Paulo Wanchope fighting in the stands with somebody. Looks to be there's a push on a ball boy and then a bunch of punches being thrown at Wanchope from somebody else. This was at a Costa Rica U23 Olympic qualifying match against Panama last night. The game actually ended in a 0-0 draw, if you're interested in that element. Don't know what the fallout will be for Wanchope. It did not look like, it's hard to tell if he was the instigator exactly. He was certainly wailed upon by some shorter individual. And come on, Wanchope, use your reach, man. The 39-year-old former striker is under a bit of pressure with Costa Rica. Not the best performance at the Gold Cup. And obviously he follows up Jorge Luis Pinto, who had great success with the Ticos at the World Cup in 2014. The English FA, in their never-ending quest to put out as much positive PR as possible, has announced it plans to spend £260 million on grassroots football over the next 4 years. This includes 30, quote-unquote, city hubs, which involve fields and various technological advancements for the improvement of soccer at that level. It's part of their national game strategy for participation and development, which is quite the mouthful. This is only about a £60 million increase over their previous 4-year period. So despite the fact they're making a big deal about this, it's not overwhelmingly different than what they spent from 2010 to 2014. Finally, West Ham striker Diafa Sakho arrested on suspicion of assault. He's being held in London. There was a call. The police responded. He was arrested on Thursday, and then he played against Arsenal on the weekend, I believe. Trying to exactly get my story right here. 25-year-old was arrested on Thursday, August 6th. Maybe he did not play. I read this story wrong. 3 days before West Ham beat Arsenal, he was arrested. He was held on suspicion of attacking a girlfriend in East London. So trouble for West Ham on that front, and this comes on the heels of the fact that they're not signing Joey Barton, apparently. That was going to be a thing. Maybe that's a good thing not to sign Joey Barton, especially when you've got a player who's in trouble for some assault type stuff. Okay, that's a good place to take a break. When we come back, we will grab our friend Tom Marshall, Mexico World Cup, ESPN FC, and many other outlets. We'll talk to him about Mexico. Don't go anywhere. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com. You're talking too loud. This Sunday, I'll be calling the Philadelphia Union against Chicago Fire game on Rabble.tv. I'd like to invite you to hear my thoughts and analysis live during the game at Rabble.tv. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in, too, by posting your questions or observations in the comment sections. If you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast and call one of your team's games? It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern for Philadelphia against Chicago on Rabble.tv. The race to win the MLS Supporters Shield and to qualify for the playoffs is heating up, so what better way to enjoy Major League Soccer than by playing one of the most unique fantasy soccer games available with Euro Fantasy League. With EuroFantasyLeague.com, don't be confused by the name. You can play MLS games for free, picking your best MLS starting 11 and subs against like-minded MLS fans such as yourself. Plus, you play in the MLS draft game just like your favorite NFL draft games. As the name suggests, you can also play a different fantasy game by selecting from six of the major European leagues, including the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Ligue 1, the Dutch Eredivisie, and the Portuguese Primeira Liga. So imagine picking a team that can feature the likes of Ronaldo, Aguero, Pogba, Zlatan, Rooney, and Messi, as well as other world-class footballers, with your chance to win prizes, up to $5,000 for the winner of the season prize game. This is your opportunity to show your soccer expertise by playing against other fans from around the U.S. Set up your free fantasy soccer game today at EuroFantasyLeague.com. Again, head on over to EuroFantasyLeague.com.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we go, back on Soccer Morning. Happy to have good friend of the show, Tom Marshall, multimedia superstar at Mexico World Cup on Twitter. Find him at ESPN FC covering Mexican soccer. Tom, how are you?
Good, thanks, Jason. Yeah, all good. Midway through the round four of matches in the Liga MX, so Mexico coach situation, obviously fluid and ongoing, so plenty to keeping me busy at the minute.
Absolutely. Well, it never calms down for Tom Marshall in Mexico. There's always something happening. It's why Mexico is so much fun and why I like talking about Mexico so much. Let's start with the head coaching search for L3. Obviously, we don't need to review what happened to Miguel Herrera. There's some echoes of more controversy involving his politics. I don't think that's even worth a discussion. What we care about is how Mexico's going to where Mexico's going to find their next coach 2 months ahead of that Confederations Cup playoff against the United States. The name Marcelo Bielsa has been bandied about. There were reports that he had actually asked for some information on Mexico, the program, the players. That was before he decided to up and quit at Marseille. Then he quits at Marseille, Tom, and to me that was like, okay, let's connect some dots. Marcelo Bielsa is going to be the next Mexico head coach, but that's not necessarily the case.
No, I think Bielsa, I mean, Bielsa's a local, he's crazy. And I don't think it's easy to predict what he's going to do and to kind of relate his actions with something else. So yeah, I think that Bielsa is the dream. It's the Mexican dream, if you like. It's the coach that I think the Federation want. I think they've talked to him before. And I think that when he arrived back in Argentina, he actually told reporters that no, he's not. You know, the Mexican job isn't something that interests him right now. So everybody's taken that in Mexico as kind of like a definitive Bielsa's not available. But I don't know. I think it's slightly more open than that. I think that, you know, Bielsa likes to be wooed. And I think that if the Mexican Federation really, really want him, they've got to go down now to Argentina, like the boss, Decio de Maria, the president, and really say that you are the person we want. Please come and do it. We'll give you all these freedoms. And yeah, but you know, it's a long shot, but Bielsa's still the number one, the big dream.
He's also the kind of guy. I mean, I just talked to Andrew Gibney, who covers French football, yesterday, about Bielsa leaving Marseille. He's the kind of guy who changes his mind in about 3 seconds. I mean, he can be very solid. Well, okay, that's relative, but he can certainly say, I'm here, I'm doing this job, you know, I'm involved, it's, you know, he quit after the first game of the year. If he was going to quit, you would imagine he would have done that before the season started. So just because he says, I'm not interested in Mexico today, doesn't mean that El Loco might not be interested in Mexico tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, I think Bielsa, he's left his last three jobs now. I mean, I think the worrying thing for Mexico, I think on the field he'd be brilliant. I think he really fits, like, the Mexican, the way Mexico like to play, the technical ability of Mexican players, and I think he'd really fit well, and he'd bring a new kind of mentality to the national team as well. But I think that the last three jobs now he's left due to problems with directors. I mean, he likes to have things exactly the way he wants them. I mean, his demands are incredible when he goes into a job with the things that he asks for. So yeah, so with Bilbao, Chile, and now Marseille, the last three jobs he's left because of directors. Then you put that in the Mexican context, and all the problems that the Mexican national team has with, you know, not just the federation, but then the 18 Liga MX clubs have a say in things. And then, you know, the television stations, the Azteca and Televisa, you know, everybody talks about the influence they have. Mm-hmm. So you've got so many people, you know, influencing who is the coach and when somebody is a coach, what decisions they should make, that you'd worry that Bielsa with the Mexican national team wouldn't last very long.
Absolutely. I mean, it seems like a combustible situation for everything that might work on the field and Bielsa's philosophies and how that fits what Mexico has talent-wise, Tom. There's definitely a chance it could become a bad situation in the end and have ramifications down the line. Now, you could also argue that happened with Miguel Herrera, but what remains to be seen. Now, there's another target. This is one I've seen this morning for the first time. Maybe you can talk about this one. This one certainly seems more attainable for Mexico at the moment, and that's Jorge Sampaoli.
Yeah, he's, I mean, there's been a few reports yesterday in Mexico that he's had talks with Guillermo Cantú, who is supposedly representing the Mexican Federation, even though he hasn't got an official job yet, which for me is slightly weird, but that's the way it is. So he's got a buyout clause to buy out his contract. And, you know, there's been reports that it's anywhere from $3 million up to $15 million, which is
difference. Big range, wow.
So, but yeah, I mean, Sampaoli gave an interview a couple of weeks ago to a Chilean journalist, and he said the question was, you know, do you see yourself being on the bench at Russia 2018 for Chile? And he said, you know, I need to question whether I've got the energy, whether I can bring something new to this team, whether I can take it forward. So he did kind of leave it open. And he also said that he would be attracted by a similar project to the one he had in Chile in terms of, you know, developing the team, taking it to the next level. So it did seem to fit in with Mexico. I think it'd be great, on the field. I mean, you know, I think that his system is actually quite similar to that of Miguel Herrera. And when the two have played actually in the Copa America and back in, I think it was September 2014 in Santa Clara. And, you know, three centre backs, high pressing game, very aggressive, vertical style, attacking. So I think it'd be a nice kind of smooth transition from Herrera to Sampaoli if that came about. But at the same time, if you look at Sampaoli and where the Chilean national team are now, and you look at, you know, the World Cup three years down the line, and you think that Chile, if they keep going like they're doing, would have a decent chance of, you know, reaching a semi or even a final. And then from there, obviously, you know, maybe doing something incredible and winning the thing. I think they've got a decent chance if you look at the state of other teams as well.
So it would take some enticing, of course. Now, if there, I don't know if you've heard anything else, Tom, concrete, or if you just have in mind a couple of candidates. We've clearly talked about the Mexicans who would be in line for this job, and more often than not, it seems to be that these are guys who've already been through the job. And we talked about some of the mistakes made by the Mexican FA when it comes to running through some of these coaches. Is there a Mexican head coach, manager who's got the profile that would still be in line possibly to be on that same list?
It's not the list's a strange list. I think the best way of describing it. I think that the outstanding candidate is still Victor Manuel Vucetic, who got kicked out after 2 weeks. And actually he spoke on Monday and he came out with some really interesting quotes. He said, you know, the national team job should be a source of pride. And inferred it's not at the minute. It's, he said that it's, wait, let me just, get it here. Yeah, he said, right now, many people don't want to coach the national team. And that's talking about domestic culture. He said, It's obvious that interests supersede the sporting situation. The federation, that makes the federation take rushed and not well thought out decisions. I mean, he came out and really criticized it the other day. And I think if you're a manager, domestic or foreign, reading Vucetic, who's a serious guy who doesn't come out and just criticize and make headlines for nothing, I think you'd consider it very seriously. I think it's a problem that Mexico has that, right now, I think the domestic candidates, not too many, will be that interested.
Yeah.
I know that sounds, I mean, obviously there will be people interested, no doubt about it, but I think that it's a bit of a toxic position. I mean, the average since 1999 is 13 months in charge. That's the average time. And then you look at previous Mexico manager, what they've gone on to achieve in the career. And to be honest, not much. No. I mean, Aguirre is probably the only one who's gone on to do something, you know, good. I mean, you look at La Volpe and how well he did in 2006. He was desperate to do something in Europe. No offers. I mean, you could speak to a La Volpe. He had no offers. And you look at where managers go on from the Mexico job, and it's not up. You know what I mean? It's very rarely up.
It's a fascinating sort of dynamic because it very much parallels some of what's happened with Mexican players, only maybe in a different way, where there has been questions. I mean, certainly the money spent on Mexican players has kept a lot of them there rather than going overseas. And there's a group of Mexicans doing things in Europe that's certainly spreading the word about those players. But it seems that growth has been very slow in relation to the amount of talent that's in the country, Tom. When it comes to the managerial situation and these coaches, and there have been a few who've made that leap, but very often it seems that they're sort of stuck in that domestic cycle, that they're just bouncing around from club to club to club. What accounts for that in the end? Is it an issue of how the rest of the world views Mexican coaches, or is it a matter of the Mexican coaches themselves?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's, Pavel Pardo actually came out the other day and he said, you know, Mexican players and Mexican football in general is always one step away. It's almost there. It's almost there. But it never makes that step. So in the Libertadores, in the World Cup, it's not the fifth game. And I think I think Mexican football operates a lot of the time in a bit of a bubble. And I think traditionally, I think that in the States, everybody has this idea that Mexican football has been around for, you know, over a century and it's been developing and the United States is this new thing. Whereas, you know, I'd make the argument that Mexican football really got going in 1970 with the World Cup, when they really got the professional league together. And so I'd argue that it's relatively new as well, the idea that, you know, Mexican football is a professional entity. And I think that, yeah, I think the mentality of the players and the managers isn't that of Argentina or Brazil, which is, you know, get out there, get to Europe, do massive things, play in Champions League. And, you know, the best person is Pedro Caixinha, the Santos Laguna coach. That's what he said. He said the mentality of the player isn't what it should be. He wants the players to want more from the careers. But at the end of the day, you see players here in Chivas, my local club here, and, you know, they're 20 years old, they're playing first team football and they're driving around sports cars. And I mean, it's like, you can imagine in their head, you know, there's that 1% of, you know, absolutely wanting to make it. And when they're 20 years old and they've already got a sports car and, you know, swanning around town, everybody knows them. You can imagine that it's difficult to get that last drop of, you know, desire out of them. It's a difficult one. And I think the coaching one's very interesting because you look at someone like Vucetic and you're like, why has he never gone to Europe? He's achieved absolutely everything in the Mexican game. I think it hampers the Mexican team. There's only Aguirre really who's ever, as a Mexican coach, gone to Europe and done anything.
It's fascinating. Let's talk about the league. Let's move on because we're already pretty deep into the Apertura, Tom. This is not the Premier League that just got started. It's not Spain, which is yet to get underway. This is a league that's already into the fourth round of matches. You mentioned Chivas. I suppose that's as good a place to start as any. Your local the club that's local to you there, and a club that is once again having to deal with some of those issues of the relegation specter.
No, definitely. Actually, it's quite interesting because I think it's had less press this time round. But I think the relegation situation for Chivas now is worse than it was 12 months ago. I think the squad's significantly weaker. I think they've got rid of quite a few players in the summer and they're relying on a few youngsters again now. So you've got that. You've got Morelia, who's one of the teams they're going to be battling against, who are top of the league now. So they look to be, you know, they look good and they look like they're going to pick up a lot of points. Actually, Chivas and Morelia play tonight, so well worth watching from the relegation standpoint. And then Puebla are still down there. Pumas might be sucked into it. Chivas, they've got another really big season ahead. I mean, it's very possible that they could go down. I mean, it isn't looking good for them. I think that they made mistakes in the summer. I think the squad's significantly weaker than it was. I mean, they picked up a point on Sunday against Tigres, but, you know, they were 2-0 down at halftime and looked pretty poor and really only came back because Tigres went down to 10 players in like the 55th minute. So it's not looking good for Chivas, and I think it's going to be a big story over the next few months.
Where else, so far, again, I mean, only into the fourth round, not everybody has played their four matches yet. You've got you got Morelia at the top, as you mentioned, Club America up there, but maybe not necessarily firing on all cylinders yet.
Yeah, I think America, they've won the last two now. I think it's going to come together. I think you can make a good argument that the best team in the league, America and Tigres, I think are definitely the one and two there. So I think America are going to be fine. Nacho Ambriz has come in. He lost the first two games of the season, and that coincided with Miguel Herrera getting fired from the Mexican national team position. So there's always, whatever happens at America, if they don't do well for a few games, the specter of Miguel Herrera coming in is there. And so I think that piles a bit of pressure.
that is so Mexican. I mean, I know he won things there, his connections are there, and now he's out of a job, but that's only going to cause problems and undermine whatever's happening at Club America now. And actually, it brings me to a question about Tigres. Obviously, they make the Copa Libertadores final. Tom, they're one step away, and they don't actually finish the job. Is there going to be a letdown, a hangover from the Copa Lib?
I think on Sunday they could only draw against Chivas. I think that there is pressure on them. I think there's real pressure. I think Tuca Ferretti, the manager, he was talked about before that Libertadores final as kind of the Mexican national team coach, like the maybe the strongest or most likely candidate domestically, even though previously he'd said he'd prefer to be a street sweeper than manage the national team. But the pressure's on. I mean, they've spent a lot of money. I mean, bringing in André Pierre Gignac, who had a realistic shot at making Euro 2016 with France. Aquino in there, Uche, Jürgen Damm. I mean, we're talking multi-million dollar deals to bring those players over to Monterrey. So big pressure on Tigres, but they're a fascinating team to watch now. There's just so much firepower up front, and yeah, they failed in the Libertadores. That was the big goal. And now they really have to start moving up the league because at the minute they're in 17th and with 1 point from the first three games. Mm.
Certainly, we wouldn't expect you don't expect them to be down there for the full length of the Apertura. All right, let's talk about something that's let's talk about Monterrey. You can tell me where they are, where the Rayados are in the league, if I don't trip over my tongue. But I'm also interested in the Argentine striker they have, Rogelio Funes Mori, a player who actually at one point early in his career won MLS Sueño and was actually part of the FC Dallas academy.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when he signed for Monterrey in the summer, I feel like on social networks and among Monterrey fans, they were a bit let down because, you know, he's not done much recently in Europe. And I think they saw over at Tigres, the big city rivals, who just signed Gignac. And it was kind of like they made this comparison of Funes Mori and Gignac. And the Monterrey fans obviously thought they got the worst end of that deal. But in the last over the last week, he's been absolutely amazing. I mean, I watched him last Saturday in the Estadio Jalisco. He scored two unbelievable goals for Monterrey against Atlas. He looks really fit now. He looks sharp. He looks like a real predator in the box, and he's just causing all sorts of trouble. And last night, he scored a goal, and he won a penalty. So he's absolutely on fire at the minute. Three goals in his past two games, and he looks like the real deal. He just looks lethal. He looks like he's going to score a lot of goals in the Liga MX, and... yeah, I think Monterrey fans are pretty happy with how he's done so far.
This is a league, again, I mean, he's 24 at this point, as you said, maybe some initial disappointment on the part of Monterrey fans because of not necessarily making a mark at Benfica, which is where he went from when he left Argentina, River Plate. For anybody who doesn't know the background here, MLS Sueño winner, but not necessarily here completely officially, ended up going back to as a native Argentina, which, you know, again, that... I don't want to get into the politics of that, Tom, but that's certainly a hindrance for some of the players who come here. Some players have gotten around it. Some players have not. He's also got a twin brother who's still at, I think he's a twin, at River Plate, a midfielder, defender, Ramiro.
Defender.
Yeah, defender Ramiro, who's down at River Plate. So they were here together, as a matter of fact. Elsewhere in this league, because again, this is a league noted for having a bunch of talented young players. They don't always make the leap, and clearly we've seen, you know, some of them go to Europe and flounder a bit and not necessarily find their legs and then end up coming back to Mexico, or in the case of Giovanni Dos Santos going to MLS. Where's that? Is that next wave coming through? Is Mexico still doing the job? Because that's one of the strengths of this league.
It's very interesting this, Jason. It's, there's been very little talk of Mexican players this summer moving to Europe. And I think I'm right in saying there's not been one move so far this summer, which is, I think concerning, because you like to see at least a steady flow, even though, you know, you don't want all of your young players going to Europe. I mean, you want them to develop here and then move on to better things. But yeah, I think there's been quite a lot of silence. I think if there's one, Carlos Salcedo, I think still might have an outside chance. There's been European scouts watching him. MLS fans will know him from Real Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the big issue here at the minute, and that's been picked up on in the press, is the amount of naturalized players in terms of coming from South America, and the Liga MX rules state that you're allowed 5 foreign players. But players from South America can become Mexican citizens within 2 years. So once they've been here 2 years, they get Mexican citizenship and then they play as a Mexican. And then they free up a foreigner spot, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm explaining that properly, but so you had like Monterrey last night, playing with just 4 Mexicans, and we've seen teams play with 7 and 8, and we've got now 51 naturalized players in the league. Now, the thing about that is obviously the young Mexican players coming through. You know, we've talked before, Jason, I'm a big believer that the Mexican youth system over the last 10 years has been, it's improved greatly, and it's going to continue to improve. Now, the big debate here at the minute is that are they going to find spaces within the first teams of Liga MX clubs, and I think it's a fascinating debate, and honestly, the naturalized phenomenon is absolutely sweeping over compared to a couple of years ago when they changed the rules. It used to be that a player had to be a Mexican and have lived in Mexico for 5 years to be able to qualify to be a domestic player. So it's something to watch out for, and I think it's a debate that's going to go back and forth over the next couple of years.
Well, this is also a league that at one point mandated that so many minutes go to players under a certain age, certainly Mexican players developed by these clubs, and then that rule was pushed aside because it seemed to have done its job. Is there any chance that that sort of thing comes back?
It wouldn't surprise me just because of the ferocity of the debate. I mean, we're seeing clubs like Tigres and Monterrey who are giving they're really not giving opportunities to young players, I mean, at all. And I think that's dangerous because they've both got, you know, good youth programs as well. And I think they're going to have to do something at some point. Because it is harming this process of young players coming through.
It's also interesting to consider. I mean, I think for outsiders, for people who occasionally partake in this league but don't necessarily pay attention week to week, Tom, you know, we have this notion that there are big clubs in Mexico. Obviously, we know Club America and Chivas de Guadalajara are massive clubs. There are a couple others maybe in the second tier. But it's also a league that throws up sort of the odd winner of the league. There just seems to be parity, if you know what I'm saying, in some measure. And yet, what you're describing at Tigres and some of these other clubs is spending to the point of a separation, spending to the point of maybe there's a gap growing between not haves and have-nots, but certainly big clubs and not so big clubs.
I think to a degree, but I think what happens in Mexico is just the system is so, in a way, bizarre. I mean, two seasons every calendar year, you know, so you play 17 regular season games and then go to a playoff both seasons. So you've got two playoffs a year. So really, you're getting that top eight and you're already in the playoff. I mean, the top eight out of 18 clubs. So I think that kind of, even though I think, yeah, we are seeing America, Tigres, especially Monterrey are up there. You know, we're seeing teams now with big spending power putting together really, really good teams. But I think that just because of the way the system is, it's very difficult for them to dominate for any long period of time. And I think that the way the pressure is and the demands to win, which are unrealistic considering the way the league's, you know, the format of the league. It's, I mean, if it, you know, a playoff can throw up absolutely anything, and everybody knows that. But you know, the way that it moves around in terms of the management and stuff, I think that, yeah, it's. I think it levels it out. I think the system of the league just does level it out a little.
Yeah, it's almost like a small sample size creates chaos, and that's really what you're talking about here. You're only 17 games in the season, then you play the playoffs, and we know playoffs can be wacky sometimes. Certainly, we know that from MLS examples. All right, Tom, this is the portion of the interview where I get all selfish and start talking about American players in Mexico. I'm going to start with Joe Corona. I don't know if we'll go anywhere else. Let's just focus on Joe Corona. Formerly at Cholos, now he moves on to Veracruz. He's 25. I think that American fans want to see Joe Corona take the next step, a new level. And he certainly played well enough at Tijuana. How's he doing at Veracruz, and what's his future?
Very positive. I'm not sure he was delighted with the move. I think ideally he would have gone to a bigger club, but to be honest, you know, Veracruz has started the season well. He's been starting games. I mean, I think that's the key with Joe Corona. I mean, I think he's had a couple of injuries at Tijuana that hampered him when he was just nailing down the starting spot. But I think he started all the games this season now. Veracruz second in the league, three wins out of four games. So he's playing in a bit of a deeper role in the central midfield. So, yeah, and I think it's positive for Joe. I think he's I think the change might do him good as well, because obviously he's from the San Diego, Tijuana area. And I think, you know, leaving the friends, leaving that comfort and moving to Veracruz could be a positive. Have we got quick time for William Yarbrough?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
He's struggling. He's the opposite end of the scale. He's been dropped by Leon, by Leon's manager, PC. He came out this time last week. He played in the Copa MX, 3-3 draw against San Luis. He had an absolute nightmare. Two of the goals were completely his fault. Yeah. He's been dropped last weekend and the weekend before. So since coming back from the Gold Cup, he's been overtaken by Christian Martinez in Leon's goal. He said after last week's game that it was the worst display that he's ever had since arriving at Leon. So things aren't looking good for him at the minute.
And you know, it seems that maybe some of the Mexican American players in the dual internationals that Jurgen Klinsmann has picked out are it's not working for them. Let's go to Alvarado, because Ventura Alvarado played a significant role in the U.S. Gold Cup campaign. We know how that ended, Tom. I don't think anybody was convinced by his performance there. People that I know who watch the league much more often than I do will say that, you know, this is who he is. He's not necessarily a solid defender, a consistent defender, and he is he has some cover at Club America when he does play that he doesn't get with the U.S. national team. Where's he at right now in his career and in his station at Club America?
Yeah, I mean, he came back from the Gold Cup in the first game back. He had a disaster as well. Yeah. I mean, he really had a poor game, and I think he scored a really bad own goal as well. So, and last night, America won 4-0 against Dorados, and he was on the bench. He came on in the 70th minute. Yeah, I think he's a young player. I mean, he's still very young. I think that he's taken a knock for the U.S. national team with the criticism. I think he's been criticised recently for America as well, obviously with his performance there. But I mean, this is a kid who's moved down from Phoenix to Mexico City when he was 15. He's been through a lot of stuff already in his career, even though he's only 22. And I think, you know, it's a big this period now for him is a massive challenge. I mean, he's got to get himself together now and come back a better player. I mean, he's obviously very talented. He's obviously versatile as well. So for a national team point of view, you know, that's very good. But the challenge is on now. This is the thing with Ventura Alvarado. The challenge is on. He's come through the Mexican youth team. He's made his mark in the Liga MX. He's then transferred that to the national team. You know, now he's been criticised, and now it's the gauntlet's been thrown down. All right, what's he got? And Klinsmann will be watching him very, very closely to see how he's reacted to the negatives over the last couple of months.
All right, let's go back to Monterrey very quickly, because I believe that's where Edgar Castillo is at the moment. A player who's been in and out of the U.S. setup, but certainly doing fairly well, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, Edgar Castillo, you know, he jumps around teams.
Yeah.
But over the last couple of years, he's a starter. I mean, you know, Atlas brought him in. You know, Atlas are quite a big team now. They're not the team they were a few years ago. Monterrey are a big team. They just opened 51,000 capacity stadium. And Castillo starts again. I mean, he's a good player. He's a good Liga MX player. Obviously, defensively, there's always going to be those question marks, but he is what he is. And he gives you a lot going forward. And there's no shortage of Liga MX clubs that would like to have Edgar Castillo. Mm-hmm. It's just that on that international stage, it depends what you want from your left back. You know what I mean? And I think that obviously Klinsmann isn't convinced, and other managers before haven't been convinced at international level. And I think it depends how the team plays as well. I mean, if you play like the US, for example, at the World Cup, you don't really want Castillo as your left back, do you? No. Because, you know, you want to keep it compact. You want to keep it tight and then, you know, hit on the counter. And I think that, you know, Castillo's not the guy for you there.
Yeah. A couple of guys, hey, we'll do last thing here. We'll check on Tijuana. The couple of guys left there from the U.S. national team, Michael Orozco, is there, and Greg Garza is there. Greg Garza, the guy who, you know, sort of steps in and, replaces Castillo and has had his opportunity with the U.S. And I don't know. It hasn't gone poorly, I don't think. And I think he's still one worth watching here. Tijuana had built something there with the American contingent, Tom. I know Hercules Gomez has now left, and a couple other players have left, but is there still a feeling that Tijuana is a good destination for young Mexican-American players?
Yeah, I mean, I think Greg Garza's now, he's at Atlas now. He's down here in Guadalajara.
He's
doing okay. He's obviously come back from the Gold Cup a bit later than the other guys, so you know, he needs a few weeks to get adapted to the new coach, Gustavo Matosas. But with regards to Tijuana, Michael Orozco is playing regularly every week. And, you know, I think he's a good player, Michael Orozco. I think he's kind of underappreciated by US fans.
I think that's true, yeah.
But I think that with Tijuana, yeah, a lot of Americans have left. But I think the two to watch out for this season are Paul Arriola,
yep,
who's been coming off the bench, and Alejandro Guido, who's a midfielder who I believe played for the US under-17s,
hasn't
really been considered since then. Mm-hmm. A midfielder reminds me a bit of kind of Michael Carrick. He's got very nice poise on the ball. He's good at picking out his passes. So yeah, those two have been coming off the bench and playing in the cup matches. So I think that those are the next two to kind of maybe break through from the American side in Club Tijuana.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Yes. Alejandro Guido is definitely one to watch. And We know about Paul Arriola, and perhaps this is the season he starts to make the big jump, starts scoring a bunch of goals for Tijuana. We'll see how that goes. It is Tom Marshall. He is at Mexico World Cup. Like I said, he's a multimedia superstar. You should be following him, certainly, as you track the Mexican national team coaching search as well as Liga MX. Tom, appreciate the time as always. Brilliant. Thanks a lot.
Very enjoyable, Jason. Thanks for the invite.
And we'll talk to him soon, and we'll talk to you next. Phone lines will be open at 646-832-3909. Go ahead, put it in your phone now. Don't call it yet. I'll tell you when. It's Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com. This Sunday, I'll be calling the Philadelphia Union against Chicago Fire game on Rabble.tv. I'd like to invite you to hear my thoughts and analysis live during the game at Rabble.tv. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to the broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in too by posting your questions or observations in the comment sections. If you have an iPhone, install the Rabble TV app and add a comment to the broadcast message board, then listen live via the app. Or why don't you create your own broadcast and call one of your team's games? It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me this Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern for Philadelphia against Chicago on Rabble.tv. The race to win the MLS Supporter Shield and to qualify for the playoffs is heating up, so what better way to enjoy Major League Soccer than by playing one of the most unique fantasy soccer games available with Euro Fantasy League. With EuroFantasyLeague.com, don't be confused by the name. You can play MLS games for free, picking your best MLS starting 11 and subs against like-minded MLS fans such as yourself. Plus, you play in the MLS draft game just like your favorite NFL draft games. As the name suggests, you can also play a different fantasy game by selecting from six of the major European leagues, including the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Ligue 1, the Dutch Eredivisie, and the Portuguese Primeira Liga. So imagine picking a team that can feature the likes of Ronaldo, Aguero, Pogba, Zlatan, Rooney, and Messi, as well as other world-class footballers, with your chance to win prizes, up to $5,000 for the winner of the season prize game. This is your opportunity to show your soccer expertise by playing against other fans from around the U.S. Set up your free fantasy soccer game today at EuroFantasyLeague.com. Again, head on over to EuroFantasyLeague.com.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
All right, here we are back on Soccer Morning. It is Wednesday. Getting through hump day here. Man, I just watched something. I can't blow up their spot, Trev. I can't do it now because of the way we were directed this particular bit of content. But oh my God. American soccer clubs, new and old, please work on your whole marketing imaging thing, because, oh my God. How do I do this, Trevor, without, I understand that it's difficult to establish an identity and get yourself out there, create a culture around a brand new club, like a team that just started. That's, if you have just started, and I'm not, you know, MLS, NASL, USL, and NPS, doesn't matter what level we're talking about here. And I know some teams have more resources than others, and that can feed into this. But, guys, I mean, this is almost as bad. This thing right here, and we're going to share it at some point. We'll share it on Twitter at some point. This thing right here is almost as bad as Pablo Maurer's Catman from FIFA 15. Which has apparently blown up across the entire global internet. Our friend Pablo Maurer, MLS.com writer, MLSist on Twitter, one third of the trio over Open Wide for some soccer, a Renaissance man, a man of many talents, one of my favorite people in soccer, swear to God. Pablo Maurer went and stuck a picture of his cat or somebody's cat into the player generator on FIFA 15, I think it was 15, and created an image that will haunt your nightmares. And now it's been picked up. I saw it first picked up by Caught Offside this morning, which is just a content aggregator. One of those blogs overseas that really just pumps out stuff left and right. Then it got caught. Was it BuzzFeed first? Maybe it was BuzzFeed first. And now it's on the Telegraph. It's all over the place. Oh my God. let's go to Patrick in Canada. What's up, Patrick? I'm in Canada. I'm sorry. That was rude of me.
Good. How you doing, man?
I'm well. What's on your mind, Patrick?
I think me piggybacking off your what you just said right away was that I want to know what your thoughts are on this story that just came out of the Mirror about LAFC.
Yeah, I actually saw it written up at Yahoo this morning and shared it on my Twitter account. The story basically says, hold on one second, I actually have it together. The headline is MLS franchise quote targeting Cristiano Ronaldo swoop in 2018 unquote. And then this is basically a write-up of what the Mirror has, that LAFC has an obsession over signing Ronaldo, and they also have early plans to move for Manchester United striker Wayne Rooney. Now, they're obviously, LAFC isn't getting started until 2018. They still haven't even gotten shovels in the ground on their stadium plan. They don't have any players. They don't necessarily even have a real brand yet, do they? They haven't even established a logo, a badge. They don't have a coach. They don't have a technical staff of any kind. And here they are in the rumor mill, apparently going after Cristiano Ronaldo and Wayne Rooney. And you know what? I don't care. I mean, I think it's stupid. I don't think it means much. I think it's something, Patrick, that the Mirror could create out of whole cloth and no one's going to call them on it. LAFC doesn't care because it gives them publicity. Then the players don't care because, you know what? They're not interested now. They're going about their business. This is still 3 years away. So all it does is really just jazz up people prematurely without any real substance to the story.
Yeah, I agree, because obviously they obviously said that they would announce a crest and all that this fall, but that's still like a few months away.
Yeah, they don't even really exist as an actual soccer entity yet. They exist as an idea on paper, and they have how many investors? Like 35, right?
Yeah, a lot.
I mean, they have so many investors that we have a t-shirt over at backheel.com store that if you want to go get it, it says LAFC investor on it. It's a classic piece of gear. You should go pick that up. Patrick, you know, again, this is both good for MLS and ridiculous at the same time.
Yeah, you know, obviously, I think when they, when Henry Wen, I think the main owner, when he went with a town hall in Seattle or Portland, Mayor Paulson asked him, is he going to sign, is he interested in signing Cristiano Ronaldo? And obviously, chuckled and said, didn't give an answer to that. So,
I just love that MLS is now so much a part of the conversation. Yeah, of course, it's some of the older players. And of course, sometimes we get players who are using MLS to bump up their offers abroad, but it's, hey, you know, it's fun. I mean, I don't like unsourced. I gotta let you go, Patrick. Appreciate the call. I don't like unsourced transfer rumors. I don't like these transfer rumors that you can't find the beginning of the rumor because it doesn't have any real substance. They don't upset me. They're just clickbait and they annoy me on that level. And this is clickbait too, but for some reason I'm sort of fine with it because whatever, it's fun. Giovanni in California, you're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, Jason?
Not much, man. How are you?
I'm good. I want to talk about a few things, man. I want to talk about NYFC, and I want to talk about a little bit about LAFC, man.
Go for it. You want to talk about the two biggest franchises? Never mind. Go ahead. What's on your mind, John?
Yeah, man, me being a new supporter of NYFC, man, I just want to talk about how disappointed I am and how the season's going, man. And
What did you expect? Giovanni, quick. What did you really expect? I mean, because again, this is an expansion team throwing together a bunch of pieces, going out there. There's okay, you know, the amount of turnover that they've had in that team in the year during the year does not make for a successful MLS season. It makes for, well, we're just going to try a bunch of crap out. We're going to bring in some big names. We're going to sell some tickets. We'll have some fun. But you can't really believe that they were going to put together a team that's going to go and win any playoff games.
Yeah, I understand that, and I understand it takes time to gel and all these good players, but you know what, with players like Lampard, Villa, I kind of expected a little bit. But, you know, I'm still going to be a supporter of them. I'm still going to, you know, support them even though it's going down this road. But I'm glad to have these players already. I know you talk about how they're old and, you know, but I'm just glad to see, I actually get to see them at least once in my lifetime, because when do we ever get to see them when they're actually...
This is true.
Actually, yeah, this is true. Something.
Man, your phone is killing me. Giovanni, your phone is killing me, man. Yeah. I got to let you go. If you want to call me back a little bit later, your phone's killing me right now. I can't do that. 646-832-3909. And look, Giovanni makes... We are so cynical as a soccer fan base, especially MLS fans who are MLS boosters or MLS supporters, or I don't know how you want to say this. People who want to see MLS make progress. Or if you imagine yourself as not necessarily an MLS booster, as just a fan of American soccer, and because MLS has a leading role, you are pushing for MLS to improve itself as quickly as possible. I think that's probably where a lot of people are. It's easy to throw around a lot of criticism about the signing habits of Major League Soccer teams, particularly the ones that go out and sign 35, 36, 37-year-old players. But if you can stop being cynical for a second, and you can just be a soccer fan. You could strip away all of that other stuff. If you could strip away any interest in how the business is run and whether or not you care about single entity and how they spend their money and anything like that. And certainly the future. If you can just strip away some of that stuff and recognize what Giovanni just said, that we get to, if you go out to your local MLS team, if you have one, and yeah, you have to have one for this to work, and they have to be playing somebody with these stars. But if you go out and watch your local MLS team, you have the opportunity to see players like Andrea Pirlo, Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard, Didier Drogba. You have the opportunity to see these players in the flesh playing soccer in competitive matches in front of you. Yeah, they're not in their prime anymore. This isn't Pirlo at the San Siro. This isn't Drogba at Stamford Bridge. This isn't Gerrard at Anfield. This isn't Lampard at Stamford Bridge either. This is clearly players who have passed the hill of older age, but they're still legends. If I had the opportunity to go watch, I don't know, give me if somehow Pete Rose came out of retirement when I was 15 years old, and I think he would have been like 45 or something, maybe even older than that at the time. If he came out of retirement and was playing in a competitive game, I'd go see that. Sure, maybe he'd strike out three times, but I just got to watch Pete Rose play. I mean, I'm trying to come up with a decent example here. Maybe there isn't one. You think that if Michael Jordan suited up for one game for the Bulls and went overseas and played in front of crowds in China or wherever, you think that those people wouldn't be thrilled just to see him play? Or if he signed a contract to play with some rinky-dink outfit in a league that's not nearly as competitive as the NBA. Wouldn't they be thrilled just to see him play at this point? I think sometimes we're just a little too cynical about these things. 646-832-3909. We're here on a Wednesday. Good chat with Tom Marshall. If you missed that, you're going to catch the podcast later. I know you will. What else? I mentioned the backheel.com store. I sometimes talk about that at the end of the show. We do have a store over at backheel.com. It's backheel.com/store. That's where the Soccer Morning t-shirts now live, right? Right, Trevor? And in many different colors. So if you are interested in a Soccer Morning t-shirt, they're not on the front page for some reason. I don't know where you can find the link for the Soccer Morning t-shirt. Anyway, we've got the Chuck Blazer Baller t-shirt, which is one of my favorites. I own that one. Don Juan of Saigon. That's Lee Wynn. Got a Pirlo t-shirt over there. Trevor's Pride and Joy. The Pirlo t-shirt where he's stroking his beard and the text reads, "Is a free kick really free?" The LA Investor t-shirt. The LAFC Investor t-shirt. The New York Soccer Wars t-shirt, which I saw our friends over at Howler sharing a picture of somebody wearing ahead of the Hudson River Derby. So clearly somebody over there has one of those. You got the Soccer Morning mug. We've got that as well. I think Trevor went ahead and shared the video that I was referencing coming out of the break. It's a little bit of video from, it looks to be the marketing people over at some of the video. Marketing people over at the new FC Cincinnati, which is the latest entrant into USL. They'll play in 2016. They will be coached by John Harkes, Captain for Life John Harkes. So that's kind of cool. I'm not sure why they're FC Cincinnati and not Cincinnati FC, but whatever. Now, again, they're trying to market themselves in Cincinnati. Now, clearly in that town, you've got the Reds, you've got the Bengals. There's competing things. I imagine there's some sort of other minor league events around and other entertainment options. So if you're FC Cincinnati, you got to get out there. You got to tell people about your club. You're probably not putting television commercials on. You're probably going to have to get this. I think this is a street team approach, which, you know, hey, or organically speaking, a street team approach is fine. Not organic. It's not organic. It's manipulated, but you know what I mean? Get a bunch of kids together, have them, you know, show a little bit of enthusiasm, get out there and push the product. There's some chants that they put together a video, and it's like six people of the younger persuasion. They're holding up scarves and they're chanting, but it's as if you got a bunch of soccer zombies together and told them to hold up scarves. It's terrible. I don't know. I don't know what they should do, but just don't do what they did. I mean, I guess. I mean, it's tough, man. I don't want to criticize people for trying. And that's what they're trying. And, all right, so what did you share, Trevor? The FC Cincinnati chant? Oh, oh man, I can't stop laughing. The Seven Nation Army FC Cincinnati chant, is that what you shared? Or is it something FCC? They're going with FCC, which makes them sound like they're cheering on the Federal Communications Commission. That's not good. It's not good, guys. 646-832-3909. Got a couple of minutes left here. If you want to get in, this is your opportunity. It's the last call for phone calls on a Wednesday. And yes, thank you very much, Robert. You are reminding me that I meant to talk about U.S. Open Cup in this time, and I forgot. So, Robert, U.S. Open Cup, what's going on?
Hey, yeah, I'm going to, you got both semifinals, and I want to talk about, I'm going to watch that, the KC RSL, because it seems it could be a, seems like it's going to get, very intense and passionate.
Yeah, those two
teams don't like each other.
They have a rivalry that should feed into this. Now, I did see something this morning that said that game won't be on television. Is it going to be streamed? It won't be on TV. Will it be streamed?
Yeah, it's going to be on YouTube, and that's kind of what I wanted to call about. Since I don't know if you remember, but I called like last round. I said like one way to get the creator awareness is by, ranking the teams. And I was like looking at the if you go by the supporters here, and if you have them, Sporting Kansas City, which are number 5, and then they're going against RSL, and they're like number 12. So you know, like in college basketball, when you rank teams like 5 against 12.
Yeah, I don't know that would carry over necessarily. And look, first of all, Robert, if you did use that ranking system, which I actually think is a cool idea on some level, you have to rank everybody before the competition even starts. So I'm not sure where Sporting would have ranked based on, it would have to be on last year's standings. It would be on based on last year's finish, not on this year. But I see what you're saying.
Yeah, well, I know that's just a suggestion. I'm not saying it should be a fact, but I'm just saying that's one way you create awareness, because when you watch the college basketball, you only have to put the name. You can just say number 1 against number 16, and then if 16 wins, people go crazy. Like the whole March Madness thing. But I'm going to watch the FKC RSL one, because I think it's going to be crazy. And I just want to get your opinion. Who you got in those two semis?
I've got Sporting. I mean, I know that that game's in Kansas City, so I got Sporting. And I think I'll take the Fire. I mean, the Union are at home, but I think I'll take the Fire in that game.
Okay. Well, yeah, because I will. It's going to be very interesting for those two teams, because they may not make the playoffs, so they're going to fight for this, and it's going to be very, very great. So I'm just going to be tune in tonight. Are you going to watch it by chance?
If I can get it, if I can get myself, yeah, if I can find some time, I certainly will. I got a lot of things to do tonight, but the U.S. Open Cup needs our attention if it's ever going to become a thing. So, you know, we gotta look. Thanks for the call, Robert. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, there goes Robert in L.A. U.S. Open Cup tonight. As I said, no television for RSL and Sporting. I don't know if the other game's on TV. There's a full write-up of the television situation for this competition at KansasCity.com, the Kansas City Star by Sam McDowell. Wednesday night, Sporting Kansas City will play host to its biggest rival, Real Salt Lake, in the semifinals of a 91-team knockout tournament, blah, 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 but it won't be on TV. It's unlikely to draw a sellout inside a venue that has been filled to capacity for the past 64 MLS matches. And then there's a quote from Peter Vermees. I can't speak for everybody else, but it's a huge competition, especially when you have all the different divisions vying for the opportunity to play against a team in MLS. It's an incredible competition from that perspective because it doesn't exist in other sports in this country. And the story really goes into some of the disconnect between trying to explain how this competition works to people outside of the usual sports circles and obviously outside of soccer, et cetera, et cetera. It is a bit of a travesty. All right, let's go to our boy, Eddie up in Brooklyn. Wants to talk about Paulo Wanchope. Hey, Eddie, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? Did you see the video from last night?
I did, and I hit it off the top, Eddie. And I'm not exactly sure what he did and if he did anything wrong. I'm not saying that he's not culpable on some level. You can't react like that. There was a push there at the beginning. I don't know what that was. I don't know if somebody said that was a kid. If he's pushing kids, that's a problem. But he also got wailed on.
Well, let me debunk a couple of things that people are throwing out there. Number one, he didn't push a kid. What happened was he was trying to open the gate rather violently. And as he's doing so, that little short security guard pushes him.
Okay.
And as he's starting to go down the steps, there's a little kid right in front of the steps. So as he's catching his balance, he extends out. It's just human nature. Just so happens to touch the kid. So he's actually pushed into the kid by the short security guard.
Got it.
And this is where he went wrong. Rather than defuse the situation, he just straight cold cocks the dude.
Yeah.
Gets pushed back. The dude is kind of taken aback a little bit. And then he just starts wailing on Wanchope. Wanchope is trying to put him in a headlock to try and calm him down. And then that's when, you know, security guards and players and everybody starts coming in. And I think the one telling image, I don't know if everybody saw the image afterwards because the video kind of gets cut off. You can actually see Wanchope like just complete handful of crotch, like security card crotch, just grabbing on for dear life. And that pretty much got separated.
All right. So what happens, Eddie? What happens?
I mean, everybody keeps throwing that false equivalence of, well, Miguel Herrera punched the journalist, so he got fired. So it should be the same thing for Wanchope. And I don't think you can actually equate the two because they're two different situations. I think one was Miguel Herrera actually actively looking for trouble, one. And two, I think Mexico was looking for any reason to throw out Wanchope. I don't think that Costa Rica is in that same position. I think that the fact that they're taking their time right now and they're kind of investigating the situation and trying to get all facts put together before making the decision kind of shows the hesitance to want to get rid of Wanchope. Because the guy is an icon of Costa Rica. He's the greatest player we've ever produced.
Yeah.
And he's loved by the people. So I don't think anybody is actually in a rush to let go of him. Actually brought in Alajuelense's old coach to kind of be his assistant to kind of help him more with the tactical part of the game because Wanchope, you know, for all his great work that he's done with Costa Rica, bringing in younger players, he does lack some areas managing the game, and that's where Machio was supposed to help. So I think that Costa Rica wanted to do that moving forward, this kind of with the pressure from everybody else trying to make them reconsider it. But I honestly, I wouldn't fire him. So you can't act like that, but, I mean, it's not as bad as people were trying to paint it out to be.
Okay, fair enough. I said this about the Herrera video as well. I didn't see anything there. Now, I don't think he got fired based on the video. He got fired based on almost some other stuff. There probably was some politics involved. He did something he shouldn't have done. But I mean, as viewers of this, as third parties sitting over here, thousands of miles away from where this thing happened, I don't know enough of the context. I mean, you've explained some of it, Eddie. I imagine there's a lot of reports out there. I imagine there's a lot of conflicting information. Again, it looks bad, but I don't know if that automatically means he should lose his job. So I guess I'm okay with I'm not a Costa Rica fan. I'm not Costa Rican. I really not have no, I have a horse in this race. So. Whatever they decide to do, ultimately it's about whether or not Wanchope is bringing a negative image to the Costa Rican national team, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, I think people, everybody's quick to fire everybody. You know, it's easy to fire somebody when it's not your job. I think, you know, it's just everybody's first inclination. Like, that's what we have to do. But in this case, you know, take the facts, get some perspective, and then go from there.
Yeah, okay. All right, man. Appreciate the phone call. You got anything else you want to talk about before we let you go?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, there goes Eddie in Brooklyn. Hall of Fame caller Eddie in Brooklyn. He's got a shirt number. I don't have it in front of me. I've been slacking on the shirt numbers. Maybe it's time to give one out. The next, you know, again, the standard is you gotta be a fantastic, legitimate contributor to the show every time you call in. You gotta be regular caller. And that's it. That's pretty much it. And then it's up to my discretion whether or not you get a Soccer Morning shirt number. I need to fill them all out. I need at least a starting 11. I haven't done that yet. I'm way behind. And I'm getting criticized for when I talked about the U.S. Open Cup because, yeah. All right. Yeah. Don't listen to the show, dude. Hey, Ross, don't listen to the show. All right. I'm not dealing with that today. So thanks. All right. That's enough of that. Let's go ahead and wrap up this edition of Soccer Morning. We'll talk about the U.S. Open Cup semifinals tomorrow after the semifinals are over. We'll have a couple of finalists. We'll know where that final will be held. Again, no television, but I believe that you'll be able to get those games on YouTube. And we'll see exactly what happens with Sporting and RSL, two teams who really don't like each other, playing in the semifinals of this competition, and RSL prioritizing this. That was an interesting move by Jeff Cassar. We'll see if it pays off. All right, anything else? I'm done, right? I'm out of here. All right. Well, thanks a lot for listening, guys. We'll talk to you on Thursday. Thanks to Tom Marshall for joining us on Soccer Morning. We'll talk to you over at SiriusXM FC in about 50 minutes later. Did my invitations disappear?